Welcome back to Booze and Buffy, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel the Series one by one. We will, of course, be discussing details from previous episodes, but there will be no spoilers for future episodes of either show. Just like Xander, I'm strange and off-putting, and my name is Harrison.
And falling for those dark and penetrating eyes, I'm Jason. Now, Harrison, I know you like... This is normally when we do the, like, oh, what episode are we watching? Mm-hmm. But would you indulge me if I did something?
I had a feeling this. I knew there was going to be some bit here. And yes, I will indulge
you. Will you let me do the bit?
I will.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, fighting for the home team, we have the blonde bombshell, the Sunnydale Slayer, the one chosen unto her generation. Give it up for Buffy Summers! And in the visiting corner, the pale protector, the choker from Bram Stoker, Count Vlad Dracula! Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
I knew that was going to be the bit, too. We're really on each other's wavelengths.
Harrison, what episode are we watching today?
That's going to be some fun.
Sorry about sound that. Correction. I blew up your whole sound thing.
No, it's good. We are, well, you may have gathered, listeners, we are watching season 5,
woo, 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 woo!
Episode 1, Buffy versus Dracula. You may be gathered from the title if you didn't watch the episode. This is the one where Dracula shows up in Sunnydale, and, despite that kind of high concept, idea, it's actually largely a more...
Goofy episode?
It's goofy, but also... contemplative, like, yeah. it has surprising depth. It does. This is a very confident episode, and we'll talk about it more, but yeah, Dracula shows up in Sunnydale and puts Xander and Buffy under his thrall. And Joyce, but that was off screen.
Damn.
Oh.
Buffy versus Dracula was written by Marty Noxon and directed by David Solomon, and originally aired on September 26th in the year 2000.
All right. Jason, since you provided our lovely liquor today, will you... tell our beautiful listeners what we're drinking today?
Well, Harrison, we do live in Kentucky, the Lando Bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to the liquor store after a rough day at work, I picked up a wonderful bottle of Basil Hayden's straight bourbon, which was on sale. So that was awesome. But yeah, Harrison, would you like to lead us in a toast?
I will. Here's to being... in season 5 of Buffy. I'm going to talk about this in a moment, but I love season 5 so much, and I'm so excited.
Yeah.
This is our reward for doing season 4.
Lord.
Oh, nice.
That is smooth.
Yeah. Basil Hayden's a really good bourbon, and it's like...
Is it Basil or Basil?
I think it's Basil. I've always said Basil, but...
I mean, growing up with a Great Mouse Detective as your favorite Disney movie, like, if I see that, it's like, oh, it's Basil, unless it's the herb.
I've always said Basil Hayden, but I could be wrong. I'm open to being wrong. But it's like a good... It's not a cheap bourbon, like, you know, but it's not...
It was in this case.
Yeah, you got it on sale, which is nice. But it's also not an outrageously expensive... Like, it's on the cheaper side for, like, nicer bourbons.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still really good. Like, this is a go-to, like, wedding present that we'll give people. If they're, like, our friend Mason, who got married, we got him a bottle of this. It's just a good one.
Congrats, Mason.
Yeah. So, Buffy versus Dracula. Well, season 5. I want to start this by just kind of briefly explaining why I love season 5 so much. I feel like I don't need to go to bat for seasons 2 and 3 because they're pretty...
Reputation precedes themselves.
Yeah. And I feel like season 5 doesn't get that as much. I don't think it's, like, a disliked season.
It's overall almost forgotten, which is strange because so much stuff happens in
it. Yeah. It's... I think the issue is, I mean, for a lot of fans, the high point of Buffy is the high school years. The post-high school years are more contentious, fan opinion of them. Season 6 obviously being probably the most controversial. But I think season 5 is such a strong season. I think it's nearly perfect. I have a couple things I don't love about it that we'll talk about when we get to them, but I do think overall it's consistently the strongest. I don't think
you don't have any Go Fish.
There are no episodes. Go Fish. I actually, and listen, I am, you know, I will be kind of paying attention to this, but and I may change my mind, but I don't think there's any episode of this season that I think is bad. I think there are some that are more on the just okay side, but I'd be shocked if I gave any episode this season less than 3 stars.
Okay.
You know, that little asterisk, I reserve the right to change my mind about that. But I also just think the arc of the season is really interesting. I think my favorite seasons of Buffy are typically the ones where Buffy's arc overall revolves around some sort of interpersonal relationship. Because I think that's where Buffy, the show, is at its strongest, is in the interpersonal relationships. Season 2 is obviously Buffy and Angel. Season 3 is Buffy and Faith. This season, though, is Buffy...
And Buffy and Giles.
And Buffy and Giles, absolutely. And this season is Buffy and some other characters, but I think the most important relationship in this season is Buffy and herself. And that, yeah. I think that's a big part of why it's my favorite.
Given like how even in this episode they're talking about the effects of the spell to summon what's her name?
Sinéa.
Mm-hmm. I keep wanting to say Zendaya. I'm like, that's not right. their spell to summon Sinéa is that's going to be like a huge thing going forward. It was a huge thing in this episode.
Yeah.
Which kind of like is one of the things that gives it that season premiere. I feel like a lot of the other season premieres are kind of fairly large fanfare, whether it be mm-hmm. like destroying the bones of the master or, you know, running away and going to a hell dimension.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or starting college.
Yeah.
This is a pretty low-key affair for a premiere, but it also is, like, really setting up a foundation for this season, mm-hmm. particularly in those, you know, you mentioned there were a lot of the theme, most of the major themes of this season are laid out here in this premiere, and a lot of those were kind of hinted at in
Restless.
In Restless. Dracula even repeats Dream Terra's line, which is
haven't yet begun.
Awesome.
We've only just begun to live.
I also just like that this, you know, we don't get a we're in spooky season right now. It's October. We don't have a Halloween episode this year.
But I mean, we got Dracula.
But this is this feels like it's our it kind of fills in for our Halloween episode that we don't get. Let's dive right the dick in.
Whoa.
So
I forgot how gay we made this thing.
And I will make it gayer.
That's my goal. Gayer all the time.
This podcast will be 69% gayer by the end of it.
Nice.
So we open up on Buffy, unable to sleep. Probably because there's a giant boring
one
piece of cardboard next to her.
One would say she's restless.
She's a bit restless. This is a cool opening. It's really simple. Buffy can't sleep. She gets up, gets dressed, goes out, kills a vampire, and then comes back and gets back into her pajamas and back in bed. And
she got a smile on her face.
And she's like pretty happy about it. And I think that's a great place to start your season. It's like, this is where Buffy is right now. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Then we have our opening credits, which now include our girl Emma Caulfield playing Anya. Not Tara yet, but
not Tara.
Be patient, guys. Be patient. It'll happen.
But Anya's there. I always enjoy starting a new season, not just when new cast members get added, which is fun, but just like the updating which clips they use.
It's really funny because I've been watching Vampire Diaries since I came back from Covington. Guys, I actually got to go and see locations where they filmed the Vampire Diaries, and that was pretty damn awesome. It's like a place that so many movies and TV shows were filmed, and yet the one that like is the most prominent that people still go and visit is Vampire Diaries. But yeah, like it's very much like a lot of your CW shows now. It only has just like, oh, the Vampire Diaries, and then like a little graphic where like this ribbon of blood wraps around the title. So I'm not. You don't get a lot of new, openings. But they did have a Christmas episode that I watched recently, and instead of a drop of blood falling from the V, it was a snowflake.
Aw, cute. Yeah, we are kind of like the era of like this sort of opening credits. Not, you know, we still get them from time to time. Orange is the New Black had a pretty extended opening credit sequence.
I like
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I like the leftovers with season two.
Yes, yeah,
that was fantastic.
Definitely one of the better ones. But even all of those great extended openings, but they don't include cast photos or clips. That's becoming more rare. If you do one, I'm trying to think. Think of one that.
You know what? I'm a huge fan of. I love the. I guess the first place I saw it was maybe Daredevil, but I love those
kind of slow-motion-y.
Slow motion, not exactly stills from the show, but
kind of thematic imagery.
Yeah, the imagery representing the show. Mm-hmm. Daredevil, Westworld. Actually, I think a lot of the Marvel Netflix shows had it.
A lot of Netflix shows in general.
Yeah.
I think, and
I'm down with that.
I think Daredevils was really, really well received, and Netflix was like, ah.
I recently started watching The Haunting of Hill House, and that has that. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that opening's going to get me every time, because it's so cool.
Haunting of Bly Manor has a similar structured opening that's really cool and very, very haunting. As is appropriate for a show about hauntings.
Let's get back to the episode. Yeah.
The gang's at the beach, having a fun beach day.
Yeah.
That's cute.
It's fun how, it's so well known that they live in California on the coast, and now we're seeing them go to the beach.
I mean, I think the only other time we've seen them go to the beach is in the aforementioned Go Fish. I don't think we've ever seen them go to the beach, and never in this sort of it's a sunny, happy day.
Let's go to the beach. Let's go get away. Stay. What's you gonna say?
Buffy and Riley are playing with a football, which Buffy slays. Not after knocking Riley's ass out with it.
Good.
Guys,
you know I didn't like Riley last season. Well, my patience with him in this season is already gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
He very much has the whole...
What little purpose, your purpose he had.
Your purpose has been served, yo.
Xander's trying to get the grill started and can't do it.
I
So
do
Willow.
love their whole speech about guys, I think we narrowed down why we're the sidekicks.
They don't want to expend any effort.
Yeah.
But yeah, Willow ignites it. It's a pretty impressive. I feel like that's the most, up to this point, like, the most casual use of, like, really powerful magic we've seen from
Yeah,
Willow.
because it doesn't seem to take a lot of effort and just massive flames
Yeah.
and then rain.
And then rain, which Willow insists she did not do. We get a cut from that to two men delivering a large crate filled with dirt.
Oh, this sounds familiar. I wonder where that crate came from.
So I'm gonna. I think you've read Dracula more recently than I have.
It was a couple years ago for a book club.
Okay. I haven't read it probably in 10 years. So some of the things I was like, okay,
That might be the most surprising book that I've read multiple times, because I believe I've read it at least three times. And quite frankly, I haven't really liked it any of the times that I've read it. It just keeps coming back.
I'm gonna need you to help me remember some of the lore
Okay.
if I forget. So I do know he can't, when he travels, he has to take the dirt from his
His homeland.
homeland with him. And what about the rain? There's something with the rain, right? Like he.
That I don't remember.
Okay.
It doesn't really stick out. But yeah, there are throughout this episode, there are a lot of obvious references to Dracula. His ability to take mist form, his ability to turn into a bat. And
And a
obviously,
wolf.
and the wolf, yes, he's able to shapeshift, and Xander's very much Renfield and all the way down to the Eden bugs, and Buffy is for like her initial encounters with Dracula is very much Lucy.
Yeah. Lucy Western, Westonra, Western, Western, Worcestershire.
It's Worcestershire. And then, also kind of takes like a Mina Harker vibe as well. But I feel like most of it is reference to the Lucy when she's under the thrall.
Yeah, although I would say she more takes on like the, I mean, who is it who actually kills Drac? Is it Jonathan Harker who kills him, or is it Van Helsing?
I don't think it's Van Helsing. Maybe it's like that American, because like, God, I can't remember his name. There are lots of there's like three guys that are in love with
There's
Lucy.
too many, and it makes it
There's three guys
difficult.
that are in love with Lucy plus Jonathan
Right.
Harker.
Plus Van Helsing.
Yeah.
And it's those three guys should have been one
I
guy.
know it was the American who died at the end.
Okay.
So maybe he wasn't the one. Maybe it was Jonathan Harker.
Okay.
You know what? I'll look it up while you continue with the
Well,
episode.
while you're looking up, I will say I did
By the
a
way, spoilers for a very old book.
Yeah. We went and saw Actors Theater's production of Dracula a couple years
I
ago,
still haven't done that.
where in this production, so for listeners who aren't from around where we are, Actors Theater is a local professional theater, and they do Dracula every year. It's their annual Halloween show. It's their big money maker.
Okay, I was right. Quincy was the name of the guy,
Okay.
the American who was one of the three guys lusting after Lucy. By the way, Lucy's last name was. Oh yeah, so Lucy was Westenra, and John Seward, Quincy Morris, and Arthur Holmwood
Okay.
were all lusting after Lucy. And yes, they did not need to be three separate
Okay.
male characters. But yeah, Jonathan Harker actually slashes Dracula's neck and Quincy stabs him in the heart. But he's mortally wounded from fighting, I believe is. Oh yeah. the men that were carrying Dracula's box. And Quincy dies, but Jonathan and Mina have a son 7 years later, and they name him Quincy for for him.
So a couple years ago at Actors Theater, in the novel and in most adaptations, the men go off to fight Dracula and Mina gets left behind.
To be put in danger of Dracula.
Yeah. In this adaptation that they did, which I think they wrote, I think it was just one that I think they write their own, they actually had Jonathan Harker be like super like injured really badly and like has to be left behind, and Mina goes with the men, and she's actually the one who delivers the killing blow, and it ruled. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool, because I wouldn't have minded that. Honestly, I have so little... It comes across saying that I don't think Dracula itself is a bad novel. It just... I feel like it... Wow, I guess I don't have the words for this that aren't, like, this is terrible. But
I just don't like it very much.
I feel that its reputation precedes it way too much. Mm-hmm. I think both Dracula and Frankenstein, though Frankenstein, I love that novel. Yeah. I recently listened to the audiobook of it, read by a dude from Legion.
Wow. Dan Stevens?
Dan Stevens, yes.
Hot.
Yeah, no, it was. But, yeah, those novels are so old, and everybody knows the story, that, you know, when it comes to stage versions and newer adaptations, I welcome new takes on it. But they need to be good takes.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, there are so many adaptations and versions. Yeah, you should be doing something new, like trying something new, because it's already been done. With Dracula, I just think, I recognize its influence and why it's a really important book. It's just not one that I like very much.
That being said, with Frankenstein, I would actually love a 3-hour long movie. Honestly, all I was thinking of while I was listening to the book, because normally I do it when I'm either like walking around my neighborhood or mowing the lawn, was how could I adapt this? And like, I just want a straight up adaptation of Frankenstein, because I believe it is an amazing story as it is. And I don't think anybody's ever done hasn't been any successful straight up adaptations of it that actually nail why it's such a good book.
The closest I can think of is the 94 version with Kenneth Branagh and Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's an okay movie, but it does have issues, and it towards the end takes a lot of liberties with the original source
material. Yeah, like I say, man, just keep the source material the way that it is. I think you've got a fantastic movie right there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll adapt it.
Do it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Giles and Willow are scanning books, because that went so great the last time. Giles does...
It's okay. We're in the 2000s, so everything's fine.
They checked to make sure there weren't any demons.
We're out of Y2K, or we conquered Y2K.
Yeah. Willow made sure that her laptop was not connected to the internet. So if a demon gets in there, it's just stuck in that one laptop.
Do you remember Y2K?
What do you mean by do I remember it?
Do you remember how much people freaked out about it?
I
know you were fairly young. I was young at the time. I was in I was in fourth grade, I believe. Or no, excuse me, I was in third grade.
No, that's not right.
Don't tell me what you...
Well, you're older than I am, and I was in third grade.
Well, I remember...
Because I was 8.
Okay. And I was 10. So yeah, it would have been fourth grade for me. Or third or fourth grade. You know what?
10 to me is fifth grade, but I'm also a summer baby, so...
I remember the Bush election, the first Bush election happening... And I thought it was in fourth grade, but then again, it might have been fifth grade. I don't know,
I vaguely remember it.
I do remember I do remember not understanding why people were freaking out, but I do remember people freaking out. Everybody, like, Y2K was what everybody was talking about.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it was. It was like, I remember people talking about it, but I didn't understand what it was. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people were freaking out because they thought that with the years changing from, you know, 1990 whatever, since all computer programs had been made in the 90s at the time, they thought that when the dates flipped over into the year 2000, all the computers were going to fail and we would be thrown into a dark age.
The idea... I guess this really just shows how little people understood what computers were. Because basically, that's people going, not understanding that computers know that the number that comes after 1999 is 2000. Like, what did they think that there was some sort of little flip thing inside the computer? A little gnome flipping it?
Be surprised. We're talking about the year 2000, where I feel that most people didn't really know what was going on in computers.
A couple years before the episode iRobot Eugene was made.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my god.
All right. Sorry about all the interruptions, all the tangents.
We're back, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're scanning books. So that they have them all archived. And apparently, Giles has been kind of having them do these sort of projects all summer. Willow's sick of his shit. And that's when he confesses.
She refuses to make a rubber band.
Yes, he'll just have to get a light. But that's when he tells her that he's planning on going back to England. He feels like Buffy in particular, but really the entire gang, just don't need him anymore. Which, considering
season four did set
yeah.
that up.
I think that is a... I don't know if they wrote season four, that arc in for him in season four with kind of this intention, but I do like that it takes what this episode is taking that, what came before, and building upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very confident premiere for the show, and what I think is a very confident season for the show. And I think a lot of that comes from... I think they did some self-reflection between the two seasons and went, you know, that wasn't our best, and stepped it up a notch.
I think a big thing about season four is that it focused a little too much on the transition
mm-hmm.
from high school to college, and I feel like we got a little bit away from what Buffy was all about. I'm not saying that it wasn't there.
Yeah.
I'm saying that it wasn't as present as it was during seasons two and three.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this season really gets us back into, you know, college is not going to be the main modus operandi for a lot of our characters,
right.
Or the lack of college. They are going to be focused on what happens in this season.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And in high school, they had the luxury of all of the characters being in high school and or working at the high school and or dating a minor at that high school. You could organically let that be the focus. And they clearly discovered that that didn't work as well in college.
And I do like Willow's reaction. She doesn't want Giles to leave.
No, I don't want Giles to leave.
Yeah. And I think this is Giles underestimating it seems like he's almost forgotten all of the, like, what he should have permanently learned in season three, that you are more than just a resource and a mentor to these young people. You are family.
Yeah. And it's so interesting you say that, because throughout the episode, Willow is making all these overtures to him to try to convince him to stay, but they're all of those are related to him as like a resource.
Yeah.
Like, which it makes sense, because that's what he told her was kind of the reason. So it makes sense that that's, but what ultimately convinces him to stay is Buffy needs him as an emotional support as she decides to kind of go on this self journey of self-discovery relating to the roots of the Slayer. So it's still related to like that more, but it's her plea to him is less about him being her watcher and more about being there for her. Because she tells him she's scared. So I love all of that. We get a really sweet scene between Buffy and Joyce. They're having dinner together, and this is another thing, sort of paying off some of that stuff that was kind of alluded to in season four of Buffy, Joyce saying, as Buffy's about to go back to school, that she liked having Buffy around, and the house is really quiet when she's there all by herself.
I know
And
you were
then.
talking about like how this season is a relationship between Buffy and herself, but I also think that the relationship between Buffy and Joyce also becomes also takes a I'm not gonna say center stage, but definitely becomes one of the more important relationships in this season.
It's probably. This season is definitely, I think, the most that that relationship has been explored. I think season three is probably.
End of season two, beginning of season three.
Yeah, like that transition there. But yeah, this season is. It's definitely a major part of it.
But yeah, and hey, guys, if you can,
Call your mom.
yeah, well, call your mom if you can't see her, but I know that my family tries to do a weekly dinner, if we can. There are sometimes when it doesn't work out, but it's very rare that it doesn't work out. Typically, it's on Sundays. Lately, it's been on Wednesdays. But yeah, go see your mom and dad if you can.
If you can,
Yeah, and if you can't, then
or your closest equivalent.
exactly. Don't re recognize what are the most important bonds in your life, whether they be familial or friends that are pretty much familial. And yeah, I mean, don't lose those bonds.
Jason's my dad.
I will take on the responsibility of being your father.
Wow, that was grosser than what I said somehow. All right. I'm impressed.
That's what daddy's here
Yeah.
for.
Buffy, we get another instance of this kind of like Buffy being much more active in her patrolling or hunting, as it's later described, which I think is a really accurate and interesting way to describe it. Joyce tries to get her to hang out with her a bit more, and Buffy's like, "Oh, I have to go do this. It's such a drag." And this immediate cut to her beating the shit out of this vampire with a huge grin on her face. And
Think she likes it.
while I do enjoy, and this is, I mean, part of what this episode is talking about, while I enjoy that Buffy's kind of has gotten away from being the Slayer is such a burden. It is it's slightly troubling to see her inch a little closer to maybe Faith territory. She's nowhere near it, but like, and clearly she has the emotional maturity that until recently, Faith did not have to kind of recognize that and question it.
But this is all like the pregame,
Yeah.
because now we're on to the main event.
Here comes Dracula.
And okay, so I guess it, I had questions just about how in this world everybody seems, while all of the Dracula media exists, and also Interview with a Vampire,
Yeah.
as we've also established. So that media exists, the books, the movies exist, but nobody really blinks an eye at Dracula being real. And that threw me for a little bit because, I mean, obviously, if I met Dracula and he turned out to be real, one, I'd be like, oh my gosh, so vampires exist. Magic that can make vampires the way that they are exist. obviously some form of Christianity is validated because so much of Dracula is like uses a lot of Christian imagery. So if these demons exist that are susceptible to crosses and holy water, then that means that, you know, hey, God exists. Surprise, surprise.
So basically what you're saying is if you met Dracula, your entire worldview has to shift dramatically.
It really would. But yeah, hey.
That's fair.
But hey, if I'm presented with evidence that changes my worldview, with hard evidence, such as, you know, seeing Dracula and him doing Dracula stuff right in front of me, I would shift my worldview because I base my worldview on the established facts.
Very Scully of you.
Well, you know, I try to.
I like that. Don't, yeah. You know, I'm a Scully girl.
But yeah, it just threw me for a loop that nobody, like everybody thought like, oh, you're really Dracula? And not, holy shit, Dracula's real?
I mean, I guess when you've been doing this for 5 years, you just roll with it.
I guess so. And it seems like both Anya and Spike had previous encounters with Dracula. So maybe it's just an accepted thing that Dracula is real in this world, despite the fact that the media also exists. Have you seen the movie? It's the one about, I can't remember who it was. John Malkovich. John Malkovich is the director of Nosferatu, and he is, okay, I recently watched this with my friend. But yeah, John Malkovich plays the director of Nosferatu, and it's revealed that he's trying to make the ultimate vampire movie, and he does this by making a deal with Count Orlok, who is actually a real vampire. He's played by Willem Dafoe.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, yeah. John Malkovich, Nosferatu movie? Shadow of the Vampire.
Okay.
So yeah, it frames it as, oh, everybody thinks that John Malkovich is just like putting in every resource that he has into making like an amazing castle and as a set and putting like the best makeup on this guy, and they aren't aware that he's actually a vampire.
Nice.
And so Nosferatu is being filmed with an actual vampire. So it's a fun movie. It okay. really is.
Is it like a comedy or is it?
It has some serious parts, but it also has like a moment when Willem Dafoe as Count Orlok looks at a picture of a woman and says, "Her breasts are fantastic."
All right.
So I think it very much is like a fun meta film.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. So yeah, Dracula shows up. He's like, "I know who you are." And she's like, "Oh my god, really?"
Yeah, Buffy's so enamored that she is famous around the world.
And Willow and Xander also arrive, and they all...
And Xander arrives in possibly the worst thing that he's ever worn.
It's pretty bad.
It is a tacky orange Hawaiian shirt with sequins.
Yep.
It's got sequins, and it doesn't go with any of the dark clothes that he's wearing. Or I think he's wearing white pants, maybe?
I don't even remember. I couldn't take my eyes off of the horrible, horrible
yeah,
shirt.
Like, we've talked about putting Willow in jail. Xander should be in jail for this shirt.
Yes. I mean, Xander should be in jail for a lot of things. But
but this shirt is the primary reason this week.
Yeah.
Ugh. God damn it.
Dracula turns into a bat!
Mm-hmm.
Flies away.
And Buffy yells, "Bat!
Bat!" doesn't she know that that's how, what you yell to transform into the bat?
Bat! I would love it if that was in a Dracula movie.
Do you not watch What We Do in the Shadows?
I've only seen the movie. I haven't seen the TV show.
Okay. So I must have known that then, because I thought, okay. That's a recurring joke that when the characters turn into a bat, that's how they do it, by yelling the word bat.
I've been meaning to watch it. I've had a very love-hate relationship with Taika Waititi, but What We Do in the Shadows is great. Jojo Rabbit was great.
I actually prefer the show to the movie.
I thought the movie was fairly great.
I like the movie a lot. I just think that the show has more room to breathe and explore the world of this.
Mark Hamill's in it, and he's hilarious.
He has a guest star in a season 2 episode. All right. As a rival vampire.
Bat!
There's also an episode with this, vampiric council, and there's...
Oh, yeah, I heard about that, and it's, all these Swinton actors that played vampires in previous things. Yeah. Isn't Evan Rachel Wood?
Evan Rachel Wood.
Not Evan Rachel Wood. What's her face? From True Blood.
Anna Paquin?
Anna Paquin, yes.
I don't think she is. Evan Rachel Wood definitely is.
Oh, she is? Okay.
I don't remember if Anna Paquin was... Tilda Swinton and Evan Rachel Wood are the only ones that I recall. But yeah, it's a bunch of very famous actors. Let's see.
Who are famous for playing vampires.
Rachel Wood. Okay, so I type Evan Rachel Wood, and one of the options is True Blood.
Was she in True Blood?
Which episodes of...
Because I know Anna Paquin was the star.
She was a recurring... Evan Rachel Wood was a recurring character in the second, third, and fourth seasons.
Okay. I've never actually seen True Blood. I watched the first couple episodes and wasn't really for me.
Yeah, that's very much the same situation I had. I think I got the... I watched the first disc of the first season, because I got it from Netflix in the mail, watched those episodes, and I wanted to be into it, because it was it was ticking a lot of boxes for me, but just
of course, didn't... I don't know how much authority I have now that I'm, four seasons deep into Vampire Diaries.
No, it's, different strokes.
Yeah.
So we go back to Giles's, where the Willow and Buffy cannot stop talking about how cool Dracula was. And
even Tara's a little worried.
Tara's? Yeah. Anya's like, oh no, he's cool. We used to hang out.
Riley's playing the macho man.
Oh my god, he's such a bitch.
In an episode where Xander is literally a man bitch.
He's just... I should have known that...
Yeah.
Well, no, he doesn't pull the I should have known because of Angel thing shit until later, but...
He's very much worried about Buffy. And I get, being worried about Buffy, but don't tell her to not do her job.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's really makes me mad is when... So basically, they're like, okay, Dracula is really powerful. He's got all these powers that most vampires don't. I think the only time we've ever seen another vampire do anything sort of similar was Drusilla, when she kind of puts people into trances. So we should learn more. And we're not going to take the fight to Dracula till we know what we're dealing with. And Riley's like, no, we're going to kill him right now. And I'd be on Riley's side if Buffy was doing that, because sometimes Buffy does have a tendency to be very gung-ho, no, I'm going to go stab it. And if she were doing that, and Riley were being like, actually, I think we should take the foot off the gas, but that's not what's happening here. In fact, it's literally the exact opposite. And it's just it doesn't... Yeah, and he just, and he makes this shitty comment when Buffy puts her foot down and is like, no, we're gonna, do the research, figure this out. He's like, well, the initiative could figure it out way quicker. And I'm like...
Initiative's gone, buddy.
Yeah.
Season 4's over.
No, they probably fucking couldn't. I mean, those dipshits couldn't even figure out that they were,
they had Adam inside of the facility.
Right? So, yeah, he's just being so obnoxious, and I can't deal with it. And it's not even
this is a bit of an obnoxious episode for Riley.
It, yeah.
And I just well,
there were so many grunts in what you just did.
It's just not. It's not even like that. It's interesting conflict between the two of them. I'm all about conflict between the characters. Conflict between the characters leads to some of the best scenes and episodes of the show. But this is just. I mean, this is one of those things I'm gonna just flat out say. This season has no idea what to do with Riley, and it's obvious.
Yeah, and he was birthed out of the initiative storyline, and he really doesn't move beyond that.
Yeah.
A little mild spoiler, but...
It's a big problem. And it's, you know, it's exactly what we talked about last season. You know, shackling his character to the initiative really limits what you can do with him. Unless you're going to keep the initiative around, which
we didn't.
He's just being a real dick. Throughout this, Willow's like, we could never figure this out without Giles. Giles, I wish you were there. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Laying it on a little thick, Willow.
Yeah. Xander and Anya are walking home, and Scott,
they're being stalked by Dracula in wolf form.
Dracula in wolf form, and Anya's like, "Do you think he remembers me? He said this guy I cursed was like doomed forever." And I thought that was really sweet.
I think one of the biggest losses in this episode is that we don't get to see Anya interact with Dracula.
Yeah, or Spike. It's actually the two characters who know him actually have no screen time with it, which. I mean, the other stuff's more important, unfortunately.
But Xander's mad jealous, and, you know, what else is new?
Right.
But then he, as he's walking on his own, Dracula appears before him, and he has this, dude, you're going up against the most famous vampire in the world, and you think you can beat him in fisticuffs? First of all, stop saying fisticuffs, because it doesn't work for you. It's not funny. You're not like, oh, he's an old term and he's charming. You're not. You're not charming. I mean, as Dracula puts it,
you're strange and off-putting.
And off-putting. But he'll make for a good mind slave.
Yep.
And and Xander immediately just is like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever, man.
Yep. Yes, master.
Yes, master.
Oh, gosh. On the subject of, I just thought of this, on the subject of, like, Anya and Dracula, if this show were made, like, now, we wouldn't get that scene in the episode, but we'd get, like a webisode, or, like, a little bonus short of, like, Anya and Dracula catching up.
I would not mind an animated episode, like, could be, like, a 10-minute YouTube animation. Mm-hmm. And Emma Caulfield and the guy who plays Dracula come back for it. Just
Rudolph
just for the...
Martin.
Yeah.
Who, incidentally, was on All My Children? Is that the one that Sarah Michelle Gellar was on?
Not a clue.
I think it was All My Children. Whichever
soap opera
that Sarah Michelle Gellar was on when she was young. I think it's All My Children. He was also on the show at the same time, and I think their characters were actually like linked in some way. So
you wonder maybe if SMG recommended him for the bar.
Maybe that'd be cool to find out. I didn't see anything about that on the page for the show for the episode, but Xander's Dracula's bitch now, and bitch Riley goes to Spike, and.
Is this the only Spike scene?
It is.
Okay.
Yep, our only Spike scene. You know, it's here because... it does serve a purpose. We get a little bit more exposition about Dracula, you know, his powers
fame,
or...
Fame grabbing and stuff.
Yeah.
And how that's the reason that people know how to kill vampires. Yep.
Love it.
Yeah, that is that's good meta humor right there.
Yeah. All of his like powers are essentially just like little flashy tricks that he learned from the Romani. Not what Spike says, because no one's ever gonna say it. But
Yeah, it's a fun scene, and it leads to this week's gay agenda.
Okay.
The gay agenda this week is just the pure sexual energy flowing between Riley and Spike, especially when they get like right up in each other's faces, and they're like, you can tell they're both like, should we fight or should we fuck?
I think that might be in your head.
No,
but,
it's not. You can't tell me how to interpret art.
That's true. But from a reasonable perspective, I think Riley is too traditional to want to try that. And I think Spike, however, I will say about Spike, I will say that maybe he'd try it once, but he wouldn't like it. Or he would lie about liking it.
Okay. I'm going to counter you.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with you on some of those points. Yes. Little cornbread Riley. He's going to feel it. But
more like cornhole Riley.
No, Spike's definitely still the bottom in this situation. Spike's a bottom. Spike is a bottom. Even when he's with Drew, he's a bottom. Drew is into pegging. That's canon, as far as I'm concerned. Just knocked my glasses off.
Oh, boy.
Listener's pleasure. I don't know. I think Spike,
I think Spike would say no to it, but I think that even if he did like it, he wouldn't say he did. I think it's a pride thing.
Okay. Yeah. But he definitely is the bottom. Riley's never going to bottom. Riley is a total toxic top.
I don't think I've ever heard that before, toxic top.
Yeah.
I mean, I can totally understand what it is, and it makes sense. I've just never heard that wording. So
Riley,
toxic top.
When they're finished, Riley, like, looks at Spike and just goes, you're just a hole to me.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'd turn to Spike, and I'd be like, you're my hole. All right. This is taking a turn for the predictable.
That was a very gay agenda.
Season 5, baby! Willow's openly gay now!
Yeah.
Dracula mists his way into Buffy's bedroom. That's cool. A really nice shot of the mist, like,
and this is really when the Lucy Buffy mm-hmm. parallel is there,
yeah.
Because it's very much, it doesn't seem that Buffy has any control, and
she's Dracula's, trying her damnedest.
Dracula's just doing his whole thing. He does point out that Buffy has been tasted before, because the scar from when Angel had to drink from her in
Graduation Day.
I almost said, what's my line? In Graduation Day, part two.
Because part one ends with her knifing Faith.
Knifing Faith in the gut.
That's plan B.
So, interesting that of all the Slayer strength and healing that she has, she still has a scar from that.
Yeah, I've always... She has a scar from that when it's relevant to the episode. But yes, I do think that's a cool little touch. I don't know if they thought anything more past it other than we need a visual indicator mm-hmm. about this thing. But yes, I don't think we see Buffy ever scar mm-hmm. with other injuries that she gets. That makes sense in a magical way to me, that like it's a... not necessarily a magical injury, but like a magically adjacent injury.
There might be some kind of psychological block in there because that is kind of her last intimate moment with Angel.
Well, that she knows of.
Yeah. that didn't get erased.
Yeah. He drinks her.
Yeah, he drinks her right from that spot too. And by the way, Vlad, calm down on saying that Angel isn't worthy. Angel's doing pretty well with his 9 yeah. o'clock time slot.
I'll have some other thoughts later about the number of mentions Angel gets in this episode. It has to do with the castle. And we'll get there.
And Riley.
Yeah, the next morning, Buffy's looking in the mirror. She's got little puncture marks on her neck, which she hides with a very cute scarf. I'm totally into the scarf, even if she was not hiding a vampire bite from Dracula. Like, Riley needs to stop being an asshole. I mean, yes, he is technically right about it, but, like, it's a cute scarf. Wow, the wiki's done it. While munching on donuts, the gang discusses their plan of attack.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not wrong. Xander's kind of obsessed with donuts, and also of talking about, you know, the Dark Master, Vader, and the evil prince, Vader. I love how nobody even cares that Xander is completely under Dracula's spell. I think just nobody cares about Xander.
Yeah, they're just like, Xander's being so weird. Like,
what else is new?
I do love that Buffy, like, it's a jelly donut. And Buffy's, like, visibly disgusted by, like, the blood-looking jelly, like, dripping from it. I like that detail. And they're just kind of discussing what they're gonna do. Riley explains to them what they learned, what he learned from Spike. The big thing is he's not gonna hole up in some sort of crappy crypt or something.
He likes castles and mansions.
Yep. And, Riley's yelling at her and, you're under his thrall, blah blah blah.
No, I believe what he technically says is like in the lamest voice possible, which actually is for comedic effect. But wow, you're actually under the thrall of the Dark Prince.
Oh man,
I have to say that delivery is pretty funny. So good on Mark Lucas for that.
He forces her to remove the scarf, and everyone's like, "Oh no." This is where Xander Riley says that shitty line about, like, well, I should have known after Angel. Like, of course this was gonna happen. It's like,
yeah, that's, shut up, man.
Dude, it's not great. But Buffy explains that, like, yeah, she was, like, couldn't really control it. And, like, she didn't even want to hide it from the gang, but, like, it was kind of compelled to hide it. Xander's eating bugs. Love it. And so they decide that Buffy's gonna go to Xander's to kind of lay low. And Riley then, and Giles are going to go scope out possible hiding places.
Interesting team up.
And Tara and Willow are going to go put a protection on the Summers house.
Because guess how Dracula actually got into the house?
Yeah.
Joyce thought that he was such a nice man. And, you know, sometimes she thinks that maybe she should just swear off men altogether. To which Tara and Willow just...
Between the two of them.
Yeah.
Runner-up gay agenda. I think it's so funny how Joyce is like, I don't know, like, what came over me. I would never do this, but, well, I am lonely. And, like, and it's like, girl, something so hard on yourself. He literally, like, did some magic mind powers on you. Like, girl.
Joyce doesn't know that.
She doesn't.
We're at Xander's basement.
Yes.
My favorite Anya moment of the episode.
Anya's pissed that she didn't get to go help find Dracula.
And Xander doesn't really care because, again, he's in the thrall.
Yeah. And he just grabs her. Yeah. Pushes her into the closet and locks the door.
He blocks it with a chair. Yeah. And it's so funny because that's the last you see of Anya in the episode.
It's so casual too. It's like it's very like the way it's blocked and how Nicholas Brendon and Emma Caulfield play it is just really good. It's so smooth. It happens so quickly that like she's in the closet before you even realize like what's happened. And then and Buffy just like doesn't even acknowledge
I think
it.
it, and I think the reason that it's so funny is because typically Xander would have some kind of sarcastic remark or just flat out be like, "Yeah, sure, honey, you're right." But this time he doesn't care. He just grabs her and throws her into the closet.
And then he turns to Buffy and he's like, "I have to take you to my master. It's this whole thing where I get to be immortal. Are you cool with that?" She's like, "Yeah, take me."
He's the lamest mind slave Dracula ever.
Pretty efficient though. He gets the job done.
He
So,
does.
I mean, maybe he has no style, but
But yes, we go to a castle in Sunnydale.
okay. I do like the lampshade hanging that Giles and Riley are both like, never noticed this huge castle here before. I would argue though, and I know they wanted like a castle set so that it's, aping that, but this would have been a great place for the return of Angel's Mansion. Especially with all the references to Angel in this episode and the comparisons between Angel and Dracula, the characters are making. I think that would have been cool. But that's not what they had in mind, so it's
And
fine.
I think this is like I this is another thing that I chalk up to just kind of the goofier aspects of it, because I think that while and especially in this next scene, we get kind of the best reasons as to why this episode has depth. I think overall this episode's just kind of goofy.
It is.
It's such a wacky premise. It's like, oh hey, what if Buffy faced Dracula? And everybody was like, oh wow, Dracula,
Yeah.
cool.
So actually, that's funny you mentioned that. So the behind the scenes story of how this came to be was they knew that it was gonna be Buffy kind of like against a vampire,
Why not make it the vampire?
who would like help, like she'd be working through some of these questions that she's working through in this episode and like the darkness and blah blah blah. Not blah blah blah, it's actually very significant and important,
We'll get to that.
but Marty Noxon kept being like, when she was kind of pitching it and they were working on it, be like, it's this mysterious vampire, I kind of want it to be like Dracula, kind of that vibe, like Dracula. And she kept saying it till finally, I assume Joss was like,
Wouldn't it just be
why not Dracula? Like, if, I mean,
Dracula? Like, is that cool? Can you do
we're making the comparison. Dracula's in the public domain.
that?
Like, why not? Like, it's clearly where our headspace is, so let's just embrace it. And I really appreciate that this episode does just embrace it and like have fun with it.
Also, random side note, something that just occurred to me. I've been watching so much Vampire Diaries in which vampires having the ability to compel humans is such a huge part of it, and that's not exactly a huge part of Buffy
Right.
until this episode, because they talk about Dracula's power of compulsion. So I was just like, oh yeah, that's cool. It's gotten so ingrained in my head from Vampire Diaries.
Well, and it is a pretty standard vampire power. It's really Buffy is kind of the outlier that doesn't utilize it outside of Drusilla and Dracula.
That being said,
Maybe only vampires whose names begin with DR can use that
that
power.
being say, that being said, Vampire Diaries does ditch a lot of the holy water and crosses.
That's interesting.
Yeah, when Elena's asking Stefan about all this stuff, she's like, what about crosses? And he's like, decorational. Holy water? Can get things really wet, but that's about
Nice.
it.
That's funny. I also just suddenly, when I made my dumb DR joke, I was like, oh yeah, Dr. Acula. Buffy is alone with Dracula, and she's like, ha, psych, bitch, this was a trap. I'm here to kill you, motherfucker.
He's
And
like,
he's
put down
like,
the steak.
and she just goes, okay. And I do like that Buffy's able to resist. Speaking of the Marvel television Netflix shows, some of this reminded me a bit of the dynamic between Jessica Jones and Kilgrave.
Ah, yes.
Particularly the fact that after Buffy successfully breaks his control over him or over her, he can't do it again, which is one of the plot points, is that Jessica's immune to his powers because she successfully fought it off once. So I thought that was I. Obviously, I don't think that was. I don't think they were, when writing Jessica Jones, were like, "Remember that episode of Buffy?" But I just
You never
it
know.
came. I mean,
But
those writers probably.
this is the scene where we really kind of get into the actual thematic importance
Yeah.
of the episode, and that is Dracula seems to know that there's a darker origin to the Slayer powers that Buffy is unaware of. And he does mention how she's a killer, and that's when Buffy says, like, "Oh, well, I prefer Slayer. Killer makes me sound like a tattoo
Yeah.
artist."
Well, she says like it's something like a tattoo clowns.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, is that like a Juggalos reference? Or is that there is there some it feels like that's a very specific reference that I don't
I
understand.
could see like a big kind of like typical, tattoo parlor guy with like a do-rag and leather sleeveless vest just being like named Killer. A Hell's Angel looking kind of guy.
Yeah. There's nothing in the
It
nothing in
is
the pop culture
a
references.
strange reference, but yeah, and these are all doubts that Buffy's been kind of having, which she shares with Giles later in the episode.
Buffy's starting to wonder about all of this and what that means for her. And then yeah, and then Dracula repeats the "you don't even know" line, which is such a great moment. Should we talk about some hot babes?
The wives of Dracula.
Giles opens a door and falls into a pit room, and three sexy ladies start ripping his shirt off. Oh no.
No,
Stop.
please don't do that.
Also, Riley punches Alexander. And, oh, and Riley rescues Giles. I forgot everyone's name for a moment. Riley rescues Giles from this, from the wives of Dracula, and Giles literally is like, oh no, my shoe, I have to go back for it. So, Dracula makes Buffy drink his blood. What do you make of this?
Well, gonna reference Vampire Diaries here again.
Okay.
In Vampire Diaries, in order to become a vampire, you have to have vampire blood in your system. So you had to have drank it or been injected with it or something like that. Then you have to die. And when you wake up with vampire blood in your system, you're in transition. So you can either feed and become a vampire, or you can choose to not feed and just die for keeps.
Okay. So it's a similar to the Buffy version, but with some differences. Okay.
But yeah, at this point, and I think, well, because Dracula does say, "Oh, you don't know what we fight for," which is, drink blood. That's what vampires are all about. I think it's very much him trying to. I think when he drinks her blood, or excuse me, when she drinks his blood, he thinks that that'll be like the final seal. Like, oh, I completely have the Slayer now.
Yeah, because he does talk about wanting to change her, and I think it's either Willow or Giles, who talks about how it's more, for him, it's more of like a seduction. And
yeah,
like,
and Giles says it's a similar outcome. Like, even with the seduction, he turns them.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. But he fucks up. This is actually what helps Buffy kind of break his control.
Yeah, she looks up and says, "That's gross."
that was gross. They fight. It's an okay fight scene. It's not one of my favorites. But
I think I think that might be because we don't like consider Dracula to be kind of a fisticuffs person.
Yeah.
It seems that when you have a standard Buffy fight with Dracula, it comes across as a little strange.
Yeah. And it doesn't even matter. Like, the fight's not what we're here for. She stakes him. He dusts.
But he don't dust for good.
Not for good.
But the dust does break the compulsion.
Yes, because Xander... The men arrive.
Yeah.
And Xander's so pissed.
All right, so we almost skipped over the when Riley is walking towards the room that Buffy and Dracula are in. He's like, "Hey... You stay away from my master. You want to get through him, you have to come through me." And Riley just clocks him right in the face. The only good thing that Riley does this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, and as I told Harrison during the episode, we are 2 for 2 on Buffy's boyfriends punching Xander in the face.
Let's keep an eye out for any possible hypothetical future boyfriends for punching. I honestly can't remember. So that's not any me sort of tipping my hat either way. Like, I literally don't remember.
Yeah, if Buffy does start dating another guy, she dumps that trash Riley, then let's hope that maybe this guy can solidify himself by punching Xander in the face. Yeah, Xander's pissed.
He is so tired of being the one who eats bugs.
Gets magic syphilis.
I love it. He describes it as the funny syphilis. Like, even he knows that he is the universe's butt monkey. And
that exact wording, too.
And I just love Buffy's, "Okay, no more butt monkey."
No more butt monkey.
And I will say, I also think maybe this was the show, the little meta commentary on itself, of saying, "Hey, maybe we should need to start taking Xander as a character more seriously and do a little bit of a better job developing him."
That being said, I do think that Xander took some strides in season 4, yeah, especially compared to high school Xander. I think one thing we notice in these later seasons is a more leaning towards maturation of Xander.
Yeah. And most of my issues that
he'll still have his stupid jokes.
Right. And most of my issues that'll come from Xander are less about Xander and more about just
how he's used
and the writing of this period of television. Not even this show, but just this period of television and how this sort of character is written. Where they're still kind of toxic, but that was kind of a trait that was like admired in like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You see it a lot with, it's not just Xander, like a lot of characters in this time period. Riley. Honestly, we still deal with it. Yeah, we still deal with it sometimes. They're leaving and Dracula reassembles himself from the dust. Pretty cool.
So he can't be staked. I know that so many people hate this movie. I like it though. Hugh Jackman is Van Helsing.
Okay, I've never seen it.
I like it. I know that it's garbage, but I still like it. I like that they're able to bring werewolves, Frankenstein's monster, and Dracula and make it kind of one big story. Obviously Van Helsing's not an old man, he's a buff Hugh Jackman, and I think it's Kate Beckinsale in this as
it
well.
Is Kate Beckinsale.
Okay.
I've not seen it, but somehow I know that Kate Beckinsale's in that movie.
But yeah, I love that there's like literally this scene where where Van Helsing, it's like his first encounter with Dracula. It's the first time he sees him. He like takes a stake, stabs it through his heart, and Dracula's like, ah, pulls out the stake, like, ah. And then like he holds up a cross, and Dracula holds it in his hands, like, ah, and then it like bursts onto fire and he throws it away. Nice. So I like the idea that a normal, just, you know, stake to the heart won't kill Dracula, yeah, even though that is what happens in the actual novel.
Yeah.
But I like that idea. And I keep in mind, it's not the best movie, but I kind of like the cheesiness of Van Helsing. Yep. I'll say it.
Well, it also kind of harkens back to the idea, like, in most older vampire lore, a stake to the heart is not enough. Like, that's like step one. It's like stake to the heart, like garlic in the mouth, like cut the head off and like turn the head around, or it's like breaking the Macbeth curse. Levels are complicated. But yeah, so he reforms, and then Buffy's there and stakes him again, and she's like, I've seen your movies. You always come back. And then he tries it again, and she's like, bitch, I am standing right
bitch,
here.
Bitch, please.
So then we get this really lovely scene. Buffy has Giles calls Buffy over to his house.
He has the intention of telling her that he's leaving for England.
Yeah. And she's like, hey, I actually want to talk to you about something. And that's when she explains ever since they did the spell in Restless, she's been hunting, going out at night way more often.
She's starting to question the role of the Slayer, and if it's her only, if the only thing that she can do is to kill, because that seemed to be what Sinéa was telling her, just kill, like, only kill.
So she wants to learn more about the Slayer, learn more about the previous Slayers, learn about where the power comes from, what that means for her, and she needs her Watcher.
And she needs her dad.
She needs her dad. And Giles is like, of course I'll help you.
Yeah, yeah. Hats off to Anthony Stewart Head for just, I love just the reaction when she says that she needs her Watcher. It's this, he's able to capture it perfectly.
Yeah,
just,
doesn't
say
a word.
Oh my god, this is what I need.
Yeah, it's a beautiful moment between the two characters, between the two actors, and it's also just exciting from a storytelling standpoint. Like, fuck yes, I want to delve more into this mythology, mm-hmm, and learn more about it.
And also, it's a nice little indicator that Joss is going to play a much bigger role this season than in last season. And hey, we're Giles fans.
We love Giles.
So then we end with this nice little scene.
Yeah, so it's just a cute scene with the Summers women. It's not super important, but like, I like it. Buffy goes home and she's like, hey, I'm going to the movies with Riley. She walks into her room and she's like, and her fucking sister's in there, like, going through her shit.
As sisters do.
And she's like, what are you doing in here? And Joyce is like, hey, if you're going to the movies, take your sister. And they're both like, what the fuck, Mom?
They actually just say Mom because it's a network TV show. But the what the fuck was implied.
Yeah. It's silly, but it's cute. So that's it. That's
Buffy versus Dracula.
Nothing major happened in this episode.
No. We got some themes going on, though.
Yeah. No. I like this. I think it's one of... It's not my favorite premiere of the show. The season 6 premiere, actually, I think is the strongest, like, season opener. But we'll talk about that next year
when we get to it.
And, but yeah, it's setting a foundation, which is what a good premiere does. And
I actually think, though it's not my favorite season, I like the season 7 premiere.
It's very good. Yeah. That's a really strong premiere too. Yeah. And it's also that one is setting a foundation for the season. Whereas, like, the season 2 and 3 premieres are those more are about
fallout of the previous season.
Yeah, those are definitely like wrapping up the previous season and letting the next couple episodes
settle. And I do like that season 5 is not that, because we don't have to deal with all that mess that is the initiative anymore.
Leave it.
Sorry, Riley. It's gone.
Listen, what's Rafiki say? Like, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. This is the best.
I just really like this episode. I hate Riley in it, but listen, that's just gonna be what happens. I'm gonna give this episode 4 tasty insects out of 5.
I'm gonna give this episode a 3.5 rich people dirt. Rich people boxes full of dirt out of 5. I think this is a I guess it's still a little hard for me to get past the goofiness of it, because there's so much goofiness going on, but I do appreciate the importance of Giles and the thing that, while there were a lot of crazy things going on in Restless, I like that the main thing that we're picking up on it right now in this episode is, hey, my encounter with that first Slayer with Sanea was crazy, and I'm not really sure what a Slayer is supposed to be.
Yeah. And I love that, and I love Buffy really being proactive and like, Buffy's always been proactive, but this is like, she's really stepping it up.
Mm-hmm. Also, cheers to Xander getting punched in the face.
Cheers to Xander getting punched in the face.
You're right, this was a big pour of bourbon. I don't hate it, though. I don't regret. No regrets.
No regrets. All right. Anything else out of for you?
Not exactly.
All right, well, take us out.
I will. Thank you for joining us on Booze and Buffy. We'll be back next week with Angel Season 2, Episode 1, Judgment.
Yeah. Also, I'll just say, based on my recollection of it, a really confident premiere.
It's really funny because I was thinking back to when I first saw the Angel Season 2 premiere, and while Season 1 obviously was like, had its ups and downs, I remember seeing Season 2 premiere, I'm like, I'm excited about this, especially because we get the introduction of a really fun character that I just love.
I have a fun game that we're going to play based around that character.
Okay,
that
I look forward to it.
Well, I'm Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at Harrison Alexander Kaufman and on Twitter at Harrison Kaufman. That's spelled Kaufman. I also write a blog, horrorbyharrison, .blogspot.com, where I talk about a different horror film each week. I've written a couple reviews since we've been on hiatus, but my next review going up on Monday will be my final review of my Halloween theme month, where I will be talking about truly... The worst of the franchise, Halloween Resurrection.
So we just saw Halloween Kills. Will you be doing a blog post about that?
It'll be next year.
Okay.
I'm limiting the Halloween movies to the October month. It's a theme month.
That'll actually probably be pretty good, because then you'll see Halloween Ends, and there was so much stuff that seemed to be set up for a conclusion in Halloween Ends.
So it worked perfectly.
We got to see Halloween Kills together.
We did, and it was fine. I was very excited to see it with Jason.
Before we actually got to watch Halloween the original and Halloween 2018
in beautiful 4K. It was lovely. It was great. I had a great time doing that and hanging out. I had issues with the film, which is disappointing.
With the film in theaters. But that being said, I honestly can't remember the last time I went to the theaters for a slasher movie. It may have been Halloween 2018, but boy, that audience was fantastic.
People were into it, which was fun. Next year will be the Rob Zombie movies, and then the the new trilogy.
Also, BTS, the exterior for the Myers house in the Rob Zombie movies was filmed in Covington, Georgia.
Oh.
I drove past it.
Oh, yeah, you told me that.
Yeah. I'll show you the pictures when we're done recording.
I was like, this trivia sounds familiar. It's because it is.
It's for the fans.
So,
for the shorties.
So, yeah, Halloween Resurrection. Really, really bad movie. I will say, I just did my review for 20 Years Later, which is a great H2O. Movie. And that was, as much as I was disappointed in Halloween Kills, revisiting H2O, I was like, oh yeah, this is good.
I'm Jason. You can find me on Instagram at YamiJ357, or if you're looking for me on Twitter, just plain old YamiJ.
And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Booze and Buffy, or you can email us at boozeandbuffy@gmail.com. The and.
Ooh.
Excuse me. The and is spelled out. A-N-D.
And don't forget to subscribe and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. I particularly like listening to this podcast on Spotify. And hey, the more you rate us, the more people get to listen to our lovely voices.
Mm-hmm. And the more you rate us, the hotter you are.
Yeah.
Like, that's just science.
Yes. As a scientist, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that felt bad to say.
Oh my God. Each week, we like to give a shout out to a worthy charity or nonprofit. This week, we're highlighting Cure Childhood Cancer. Founded in 1975, Cure is dedicated to conquering childhood cancer through funding targeted research while supporting patients and their families. Research is the key to unlocking breakthroughs that will save the lives of children diagnosed with cancer. In the past 10 years, Cure has invested $35 million in innovative research at leading pediatric cancer research institutions across the nation. Visit www.curechildhoodcancer.org for more information. And as always, go slay.
And peg spike. Be gay.
Drusilla, we know you listen.